I'm not here.
When Shai and Lena had declared their need to go to the tax office near the keep to get the rights to sell in the upscale market, they decided he would stay behind. There was too much of a chance that someone in the government office would realize what he was despite the mask and make trouble for them. Shai had surprised him with the suggestion that he wait in the taproom rather than alone. When he'd asked why he should put himself in the middle of a crowd, she had said, "You need to get used to people, T. I've seen how nervous this place makes you, and there's no plausible way we can keep you a secret forever. Better that you be allowed to watch the world go by for a little while, rather than be unprepared when it starts coming at you making demands." They'd gotten him a dark gray rain cloak, with slits at the corners to give his arms free movement. It had a hood that would cover his head as well, so even if he were noticed, he was unlikely to be recognized for what he was. So far, the only person to talk to him had been Mama Mu. It seemed that now she knew about him, the mask didn't make him background to her. He wondered if that was because it didn't work anymore, or because she was keenly interested. He suspected the latter, as he'd caught her several times over the last few hours looking his way. The table he was at was small, and no one had tried to sit with him, so his presence was at least tacitly acknowledged. The beer he nursed tasted terrible, but he wasn't one to pick and choose. It was on the house, as Mama Moo had said. Terry had no money to buy better, and he didn't think he'd trust water if it were offered. The conditions of the town were far from sanitary, but he'd heard somewhere that it was impossible for hostile bacteria to survive in beer, and that's why people in feudal times drank so much of the stuff. At first, things had been fairly quiet, but the crowd was getting boisterous, and he'd been waiting all afternoon. He was beginning to wonder if something had happened, but he was struggling not to think about that too much. He had no idea how tax offices worked, but he'd been to the DMV. It was still way too soon to be thinking the worst. Early afternoon had turned into early evening, though, and the crowd was getting louder. Every table was taken, and as he watched, he noticed stragglers taking chairs wherever they could be found. It was only a matter of time until someone noticed the two empty stools around his own spot in the corner and decided to take a seat. "I should probably head up to the room before things get that far." Yet he sat where he was, an unaccountable feeling stirring inside him. He knew that if he went upstairs, his insides would settle. The feeling of unease curling inside him would go away. The dysphoria would fade. "You need to get used to people." His table shook with sudden impact, and beer sloshed over the edge of his mug and began dripping through the planks as he looked up. His wandering mind had sabotaged his situational awareness. Now he was faced with three figures, one of whom had just had to thump the table to get his attention.
"I said move, little man. We want this table and there is no room here for you anymore."
Terry looked at the speaker. His voice was laden with confidence and had a vaguely Russian sound to it. He had orange and black striped fur with a white front, and wore a baldric that supported a heavy-looking two-handed sword slung across his back. A silver-studded leather belt with fine tooling and rubies inset in the buckle glimmered in the low light of the tavern, and the man glared down at him through the green-slitted eyes of a great cat.
"Christ on a crutch, it's a motherfucking tiger, man."
The two on either side of him were no less impressive in their own ways. Another tiger person, this one female and gorgeously exotic, stared curiously down at him as she leaned on a staff of black wood capped with a snarl of roots that twisted around a glimmering, rough-cut emerald the size of a full-grown man's fist. She wore cream-colored robes trimmed in red, but her hood was pulled back and pooled around her shoulders. The third member of the group was a minotaur, barrel-chested and huge. With a shield, Terry was convinced was just a door torn off its hinges on his back, and a heavy flanged mace was slung from a belt that looked like it had been stolen from some power lifter's gym bag.
"You've gotta be kidding me,"
The seconds lengthened as he stared, completely forgetting that they'd demanded his place.
This isn't real. This can't be real. There has to be some reason why I'm trapped in this illusion, in this weird dream world.
Claws slipped into his cloak to catch at his tunic. He was hauled across the table until his face was inches away from the Tiger Man's, and those burning green eyes glared into his face. He stared back, still trapped in the dysphoria. He felt no fear, because in that instant he knew with absolute certainty that none of this was real. He had to be dreaming.
It's impossible that this is real. Are you deaf? Stupid? Both? Answer me.
He shook Terry like a rag doll, and the violence snapped him far enough out of his daze for him to lash out. His fist caught the Tiger Man just behind the jaw, and though it had very little force behind it, the blow shocked him enough to release Terry, who found his feet as his thighs rode down the table edge on his side.
Don't touch me,
Terry snapped. Silence answered him. The female tiger was looking at him with wide, shocked eyes. The Minotaur shook his head, chuckling as he said,
Oops.
By now, much of the rest of the taproom had noticed something was going on, and the quiet deepened, then was shattered as the Tiger Man roared full in his face and reached for his sword.
None of that!
He ignored Mama Moo's bellow, until his Minotaur friend reached across his body and jerked him around to face the angry cow, who held a loaded arbalest pointed at him from about 5 feet away. The crossbow was as wide as she was, and Terry would have bet his last dollar it weighed at least 40 pounds. Whatever it was loaded with would probably punch through Mr. Tiger and keep right on going.
He's a paying customer and you're not. You'll be so kind as to tell me why, in the name of the powers, you think you can draw steel in my place of business.
Her hands were steady, and her blue eyes had an almost crazy kind of eagerness to them. Terry was reminded that his first exposure to Mama Moo had been the body flying out over the saloon doors, and he suddenly no longer had cause to wonder how she could run a place like this without a bouncer. She was the bouncer.
This masked cretin would not answer me and then struck me. I will have that blank fucking mask of his for a codpiece.
The Tiger Man's voice was filled with barely controlled fury, and Mama Moo glanced at Terry, then asked,
He ate you? With what?
His hand.
His bare hand? Ooh!
The way she shrilled her fright drew mockery from the crowd, but her crossbow never wavered as she said,
So you think drawing a sword makes you the bigger man, my lover? You got a few things to learn then, don't you?
Mama Moo spit on the floor between them, and there was some chuckling around the room. She then surprised Terry by turning her attention to him as she said,
Did you hit him, Terry Mac?
Yes.
He was tempted to say why, but knew in that moment that it would sound like an excuse. The dysphoria was gone, burned away by adrenaline, but fear had yet to take its place. Instead, he felt angry and humiliated, and his hands tightened into fists.
Want me to throw him out?
Mama Moo was looking at Terry as she asked the question, and the gravity of what she was about to do for him sank in and cooled his burning mind.
No, that's fine. These three can have the table. The angry one just surprised me, that's all. I hit him on pure reflex. I do not want the table anymore. I want blood!
The Tiger Man roared. He turned back to Terry and curled a fist up, drawing a thumb from one side of his throat to the other. There was a pretty impressive claw attached.
Here, or in the streets, your only decision is where you want to die.
The fuck is wrong with you?
Terry asked.
You picked me up and expected me to, what, take it?
Yes, prey should know better than to tempt predators to violence. If you had wanted to live, you would have taken it like a bitch. Now it is too late. I am going to taste your blood tonight.
Someone in the crowd shouted,
Sounds like we've got a challenge on the table. Take it downstairs,
shouted another, and there was a roar of agreement throughout the tavern that had both Terry and his would-be assailant looking around in bemusement. Mama Moo then further surprised Terry by lowering her crossbow and saying,
If you two agree to step into the pit and fight as men should, you can settle this downstairs. Do anything else, and I'll summon the city guard. They don't take kindly to predators.
She spat the word,
throwing their weight around in Florence.
Terry knew instantly that if he didn't take the fight, he'd have a dangerous enemy hunting him. Maybe three dangerous enemies.
I'll take it downstairs, Terry said.
Provided Stripes here is willing to face me one-on-one and leave his pissy mood in the ring, win, lose, or draw.
Look at the stones on him!
Balls for days!
Good luck, Pipsqueak.
Pipsqueak? I ain't that small.
The rowdy crowd exploded with cheers, encouragement, and bawdy laughter as the Tiger Man glowered, something tigers apparently excelled at. Rather than answer in words, he slipped his thumbs under his baldric and hauled it up and over his head to an approving roar from the peanut gallery. He passed his sword off to the minotaur beside him, who took it as he gazed speculatively at Terry. Unlike the crowd, both of the Tiger Man's teammates seemed to be genuinely sizing him up.
To the basement!
The crowd became a crushing press for a moment, as people headed for a curtained-off entrance in the back on the far side of the bar. As they filed past, Mama Moo came in close and said,
This is the only way you're getting a fight out of Terry Mac. If either of you deliberately kills the other, I'll put a bolt through the winner and dump you both in the river. This is a fight, not a killing. I don't expect you to come out as friends, but you both better damn well come out alive. You understand?
The Tiger Man grunted as Terry nodded and said,
Sure, Mama Moo. I won't kill him.
The tiger and his minotaur friend both laughed at that and followed the crowd down into the basement. Once they were gone, the tiger female, who'd stayed quiet to this point, reached out and clutched Terry's arm suddenly as she leaned in and hissed,
Now is your chance. Get out the front. You can get to the guard before he realizes you have fled.
Terry tilted his head, then shook it. Her voice also sounded Russian, and he thought it suited her rather well. He said,
I'm not gonna run. Go downstairs and cheer for your man. I have one more thing to ask Mama Moo about, and I'll be right down.
He is not my man, she hissed. Don't be stupid. I do not know what kind of creature you are, but you do not know who you have pissed off here.
Terry shrugged.
All the better to let him get it off his chest now, rather than in some dark alley later.
One does not preclude the other. Go! Get out while you can!
She pleaded with him so earnestly that he felt bad, as he said,
I really appreciate it, ma'am, but I don't run from fights.
Mama Moo patted the genuinely distraught tiger lady on the shoulder, and with deceptive strength guided her around and toward the stairwell, as she said,
I wouldn't get your knickers in a twist. If Terry's woman were here, you'd understand. She'd end that stripey asshole as patootie, and he can beat her up.
Both Terry and the tiger woman turned incredulous eyes her way, but Mama Moo just winked, adding,
Or so she tells me. Go on, go on. I'll be right down.
The bovine proprietress gave the now seemingly dazed tiger woman a friendly shove, then called some instructions to two of her waitresses who'd remained with those few customers who didn't seem inclined to watch the fight.
Now, my lover, before you go down, you wanted something?
She asked, turning those big blue eyes on Terry.
Yeah, I'd like a cut of the odds. I don't have money to wager, but I'd like 10% of the house take on a loss, 20% on a win.
5 and 10. I just did you a huge favor, and I'm not gonna make much on two unknowns duking it out over a table. This much won't be ranked, and no one will be able to put good odds down. Hell, I'm probably going to lose more on drinks than I'll make on bets.
10 and 20, and I'll guarantee you a second fight against your choice of opponent. You can get the odds you want then to make it up.
Mama Moo's big blue eyes were calculating as she looked him over.
5 and 20, then. If you lose, I won't bother with a second fight, but winners get paid round here. Don't intend to take that mask off?
No. Can you see it?
Sometimes. Right now I can. You're wearing a, forgive the word, template mask on your face. It looks rather intimidating. Keep it on. It'll play well with the crowd. Got a fight name?
He chuckled, thinking of Lena as he said,
Boss.
She lowed and dry-washed her hands as she said,
Oh, I like it. You're probably going to leave your guts on the sand down there, though. You do know that, right? I've got healing potions, but if you need one, that comes out of your cut, win or lose. And if you lose, your cut won't cover it. You'll owe me. I'll take it out of Lena's profits, given how close you are. I'm sure she's good for it.
That made him wince.
You're all heart, Mama Moo.
I know, dear. Now get that fantastic ass of yours downstairs. It's time for Mama Moo to make some money.
Lena's probably going to want to kill you for letting me do this.
She'll get over it when I tell her the alternative was throwing you both out and letting him and his turn you into fish bait in the street. The city guard doesn't give a shit what happens down here after the loading's done.
The two were walking down the stairs as Terry chuckled.
Huh, you bluffed for me. I'm touched.
She slapped his ass hard enough to make him yelp and said,
Now you're touched. I'm looking forward to a show, so don't disappoint me.
He grinned.
Yes, Mama.
Chapter 18. Friday Night Fights. The basement turned out to be more spacious than the tap room upstairs. Much more spacious. It was at least 40 feet below street level, and the space was dominated by a circular pit 30 feet in diameter. The ground within was sand. It was 10 feet deep and ringed on all sides by enough bleacher space to accommodate easily 200 people. Terry caught sight of other exits and suspected that most of the organized fights here could be reached through the sewers or other basements elsewhere.
If I hadn't heard the locutor talking about Lena's fight record, I never would have guessed there was anything like this here. This is fucking awesome.
Despite the very real threat posed by the Tiger Man currently talking to Mama Moo at the far edge of the pit, Terry was more excited than afraid. This place felt more like home to him than anywhere he'd been in the last week. The fact that the small, but strangely still growing, crowds in the stands were completely inhuman faded into virtual insignificance as he stepped to the edge of the pit, across from the Lion Man, and began to reorganize his wraps. Shoes or boots would be a special order for him, so in lieu he'd double-wrapped his feet. Now he took a portion of that and taped his hands absently as he watched the Tiger Man across from him strip out of his cloak and belt, leaving him in some loose-fitting pantaloons and bare feet.
Makes sense. With all that fur-tight clothing would be a nuisance.
He set his butt on the edge of the pit and folded first one leg up, then the other, tightening the wraps on his feet, then shrugged up and out of the rain cloak Lena had given him. He was down to his tunic and fighting trunks. Once he felt ready, he dropped down into the ring and began stretching absently as he did a slow turn, watching the crowd. More people were still trickling in, and none of them were coming from the stairs. That had to mean word was spreading fast through the underground, and that there were plenty of people nearby enough to watch.
No wonder the locutor was able to get into Florence and move around freely. There's probably a whole city under the city.
He caught several men looking him over, then eyeballing the tiger across from him. He figured them for odds makers, and decided to give them just a bit of a show. He shuffled his tunic off and tossed it up out of the pit with his other clothes, leaving him in his mask, fighting trunks, and tape. He did a bit of shadow boxing to warm up his muscles, then flexed and nodded around
as a fresh ripple of murmuring greeted the show.
That's right. 163 pounds of gonna fuck you up right here.
Callouts for bets grew in intensity as the Tiger Man leapt gracefully into the ring, landing in a crouch as he bared his teeth at Terry.
Do not bother to take off the mask. I will be ripping that off myself soon.
The Tiger Man growled as Mama Moose strode around the ring and began to talk, her usual matronly tones gone in favor of a bellow that effortlessly carried above the shouts from the crowd.
Ladies and gents, welcome to an impromptu, unranked bout. Got two scrubs in a ring, and it's time to find out which one gets a seat at Mama Moo's.
Laughter, encouragement, and jeers greeted her words as she smiled indulgently and held a hand out toward the Tiger Man. He seemed to be impatient to start and was clearly a bit out of his element. He wanted to fight, not listen to talk.
On my left, we have a native-born son of the Eastern Steppes, here in Florence, to stock up before seeking his fortune in a monsoon dungeon complex. A master of the sword and professional monster killer, I give you Yuri Kalenko.
Some things really never do change. Mama Moo MCs like a pro.
Terry gauged by the cheers that most of the heaviest betting was on Yuri to win. No big surprise there, all things considered. With no claws and no one to back him, Terry was clearly the underdog even in his own mind. Yuri nodded around, holding his hands up to the crowd despite his earlier focus, then let out a snarling roar that met with crowd approval and heightened their own cheers for him. Mama Moo held up her hands, and as the ruckus died down to a dull roar, she asked,
Has anyone here ever heard of a little fighter named Lena Cowhan Lowe?
She held a hand up to her ear as the crowd cheered.
Her fight name is Cowhand?
Terry smiled, glad his mask hid his expression.
Oh, I'm going to have so much fun with that later.
Well, Cowhand is back in town.
The cheers got louder, but Mama Moo's voice easily dominated it all, as she said,
Here's a juicy bit of gossip for you all. Not only is Cowhand Lowe back in town, but she's found herself a man. Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen.
Most of the sound from the bleachers died away at that. Terry did a slow turn and wondered at the befuddled expressions of the people looking back at him. Their eyes flickered from Mama Moo to him and back again.
She's amping this a bit much. Oh.
He noticed that the bookies were still working their way through the crowds and realized she was drama-whoring to give them time to get more bets in.
This woman doesn't MC like a pro. She is a pro.
That's right, Mama don't lie. Cowhand the man-crusher, the woman who swore she'd never settle for a swingin' dick who couldn't whip her bare-handed, the Minotress Titan with an undefeated record of 8-0 in the open division. She confided to me just the other day, said she found a man. He's here with us tonight, fighting for his own place at the table, and she calls him... The boss!
Mama Moo threw a hand out toward Terry as she called his fight name. The cheering was hesitant, and there were more catcalls than anything. But Terry took some comfort from the fact that it simply seemed most of the audience didn't believe the hype. Having seen Lena up close, he probably wouldn't have believed it either. He did a bit more shadow boxing for the crowd, showed some fancy footwork, then executed a quick backflip, which seemed to get the cheers going. It was a trick he'd used before to psych the crowds, and as the appreciative whistles and shouting got louder, he took comfort in the fact that, human or not, some things really didn't change. He was in his element. Be it a cage or a pit, this was where he lived, and he knew how to play to an audience.
Just so we're clear on the rules, you two.
Mama Moo faced the ring, as a man hastily brought her crossbow and leaned it against her thigh.
This is a fight to win, not to kill. Either of you kills the other, and I'll nail the winner to the fucking wall me own self. No amputations, no viscera grabs. Fight hard, fight square, and leave to pit still breathing. Are you ready?
Viscera grabs?
Terry's pucker factor went up a couple notches as he looked at the claws his opponent was flexing and pictured just how easy it might be for the Tiger Man to pull his intestines out through his stomach wall.
So noted.
She pointed to Yuri, who nodded and growled low in his throat, eyes falling once more to Terry Mack as he focused. Mama Moo's finger moved to Terry as she shouted,
Are you ready?
Ready,
Terry called, raising his hands as he took a step forward, then stopped himself. Something told him he wouldn't get a fist bump before this fight.
Fight!
Yuri crossed the space between them with a flying leap, one hand swinging in from way out in a move that looked calculated to disembowel. Terry hopped outside the arc of the swing and stepped around behind his opponent as he loaded up, then landed a kidney shot.
I thought he'd be faster than this.
The Tiger Man roared and spun on the ball of his foot, his hand flipping around to present his claws as he tried a backslash that Terry stepped away from, his hands in a low guard. The cheers redoubled as Yuri hopped forward, slashing wildly with both hands.
He's got claws, but doesn't have a clue what he's doing. I feel like I'm fighting a punk who bought some knuckles off the web and thinks he's special.
Terry backed away from the first swing, then the second, watching his opponent's timing. He knocked the third swing down with a hard slap as he stepped in and jabbed with his right, landing a short, sharp shot to the nose. He followed with a wicked left cross that stung his knuckles as it landed, snapping Yuri's head to the side with an audible crack. Terry twisted out of the way of a blind uppercut slash and used the movement to execute a low kick that caught Yuri behind the knee and kicked his foot up off the ground, leaving him off balance and open for a follow-up. Terry whirled and landed a perfectly executed spinning back kick that caught the Tiger Man squarely in the solar plexus and sent him sailing off his feet to slam into the wooden slats lining the pit, 5 feet behind him. He sagged, clutching his middle. The crowd fell silent. Terry could have heard a pin drop, but for the ragged gasps and groans of the Tiger Man as he used the wall to inch his way back onto his feet.
I didn't hit him that hard, did I? Is it even possible I hit him that hard?
Terry dropped his hands to low guard and backed off to give his obviously injured opponent space, wondering what the hell was going on. Yuri took 2 staggering steps forward, then fell to his knees, puking his guts out onto the sands. There was more than a little blood in the flood coming out of the Tiger Man's mouth, and Terry glanced up at an openly gaping Mama Moo as he flashed his hands in a quick, well, gesture. She recovered her poise and bellowed,
Yuri Kalenko, you have 10 seconds to acknowledge that you can continue. 10, 9, 8.
Yuri struggled to control himself, wound up chucking another flood of disgusting into the sand, then fell forward into the muddy pile, barely able to roll himself to one side as he coughed and spit, bloody foam covering his muzzle.
3, 2, 1, winner by knockout, the boss!
Yuri.
The Tiger Woman leapt down onto the sands and ran to her fallen comrade. She spread a hand over him, and Terry could see her lips moving, but couldn't hear what she said over the frantic roaring of the crowd. The emerald at the top of her staff began to glow, and green light began to coruscate around both of them. His first instinct told him to back away, but he stood his ground and waited. The tenor of the cheering changed, and he heard more than a few cries of,
Cheat! Magic! Cheat! Potion user! He's a cheater!
Mama Moo held up her hand for silence, and Terry was surprised when, after only a few seconds, she got it. The last dying breath of the crowd was a lone voice that cried out,
"Test him!"
A heavy thump announced the arrival of someone else in the pit, and Terry whirled to see the Minotaur advancing on him, a tower shield on one arm and his ridiculously heavy-looking mace hanging low in his free hand.
"The fuck, man? I fight clean!"
Terry shouted as he backed away, hands up. He wanted no part of what was stomping toward him.
"Stop!"
The Minotaur paused and glanced toward Mama Moo, who held her crossbow on her hip and said,
"There's been a call to test you, boss. What kind of magic you got on you, if any?"
"I'm wearing a dryad mask," he called back. "All it does is hide my face."
A ripple of murmurs washed through the crowd at that, and Mama Moo gestured toward Terry with her crossbow as she said,
"Sansan, if you please, give us an assessment."
A woman, at least Terry assumed it was a woman because of the name, stepped into view at the edge of the pit. She wore a cowled black robe that hid her features, but her hands were black furred and clawed as she revealed them, pointing at Terry as she demanded in a rasping voice,
"Hold still."
Terry held up his hands, palms out as though she were a police officer, and held still as she began chanting. The words didn't make any sense, though they had a familiar sort of sound, and after about 30 seconds she trailed off and lowered her hands. The crowd was hushed and still, and everyone heard her, even though she spoke in what, for her, was probably a normal voice.
"He does indeed wear a dryad mask. There is power coursing through him, but no spells have been cast on him. As far as I can tell, he fought with natural ability. He is mortal, but I do not know his breed."
"Take off the mask!"
someone in the crowd shouted.
"Eat a dick!"
Terry shouted right back, snapping his head around to look in the direction of the offender.
"My woman gave me this mask. You want it off me? Come down here and take it, bitch."
Scattered laughter greeted his challenge, and the demand was not repeated. From another corner of the stands, a lone voice began to chant,
"Boss! Boss! Boss! Boss!"
The chant started in several other places and synchronized until most of the audience were throwing their fists, paws, and whatever else they had in the air, screaming,
"Boss! Boss! Boss! Boss!"
Terry raised his arms in victory, and the crowd screamed in satisfaction. He glanced at the Minotaur, but he no longer seemed to be threatening, so Terry turned and walked over to crouch by the tiger woman and asked,
"Will he be all right?"
She was on her knees and had both her hands wrapped around the staff, which was planted to support her. She was breathing hard, and whatever she'd done looked to have drained her of all her energy. After a moment, she looked up at him and studied him as she panted.
"Why do you care?"
she asked finally.
"Because I didn't mean to hurt him that badly. I honestly didn't. I want to make sure he'll be okay."
"He will, though he will not wake up until tomorrow. You..."
She paused, looking searchingly at his face, then shook her head.
"I wish I could see your face or smell you. I cannot tell if you are being genuine with me."
"Had no idea the mask was doing more than hiding the sight of me. Good to know. I was told not to remove my mask, so I won't. But I promise you I'm on the level. Mama Moo is letting me use a room. If you want, we can put him there until he wakes up, after he's washed."
He hesitated, then said,
"I can probably get some Minotress milk for him, if that will help. I'll have to ask, though, so I can't promise."
"Mama Moo doesn't seem the giving sort,"
rumbled a deep voice from behind him. He twisted to see the Minotaur towering over him, but his mace and shield had been put away.
"Not talking about Mama Moo."
Terry said.
So, this Cowhand Low is both a vicious man-crashing fighter and a producing minotress?
The tiger woman said, clearly suspicious.
And she gave you a dryad mask?
Terry winced. There was no right way to say what came next, so he settled for blunt and hoped for the best.
Lena is one of my women. The dryad is the other. Her name is Shy.
The minotaur let out a rumbling chuckle, while the tiger woman just stared open-mouthed at him for a long moment before she recovered enough to say,
You do not look much like a lion to me, Terry Mack.
Yeah, I'm not. Not a liar, either, if you're wondering.
The minotaur scratched his chin idly, and the rasping sound was loud, even amid the general din. His dark eyes were intently focused on Terry, and he seemed to be considering the smaller man intently, but he didn't say much.
Bet that dude could strike matches all day with stubble that tough.
After a moment, the minotaur glanced at the tiger woman and said,
Maybe him.
She glanced from the minotaur to Terry, and her eyes seemed to take on a speculative cast. She said,
We will get our own room. Thanks.
Okay, but stop by tomorrow and ask for me. I'll see about the milk.
I will. Will you at least tell me your name?
She asked, still looking searchingly at his face.
Mama Moo told you upstairs. She wasn't lying either. My name really is Terry Mack. You?
Mila. Mila Kolenko. Yuri is my brother.
Chapter 19. Hero Thinking. Getting out of the underground proved more difficult than Terry anticipated. Once he stepped out of the pit, he was practically mobbed with people asking questions ranging from offers to rep him in the fight game to speculation on his breeding. He managed to swipe the cloak and shirt from where he'd left them and slipped into one of the tunnel entrances instead of trying the stairs. That way lay madness, given that there looked to be someone on pretty much every step, and most of them had eyes on him when he looked that way. The tunnels were just as crowded, but fewer people were trying to chase him down or talk to him, and after a few minutes of dodging, he realized that no one was chasing him anymore.
Thank God for weird magical masks.
He walked with the general flow of people up some stairs and wound up in a tavern he didn't recognize. Mama Moo's place was close, low slung, and looked to have seen better days. This place, by contrast, looked as though it had been ramshackle from the day it had been built and gone downhill from there. Terry stepped out the open front door and found himself only about 20 feet from the docks. He walked that way, his thoughts fragmented. He'd gone into the fight with few expectations beyond trying not to get killed. He couldn't get away from the fact that he'd wanted to get in the ring, and it hadn't mattered to him that he was up against a fucking tiger man. The victory had been as unexpected as it had been easily attained, and the whole situation left him wondering. The docks were well constructed. The lumber was close fit, and there was tar on the pilings. The river was fairly broad here, looking to be almost 100 yards wide, and Terry wondered idly if it had been dredged and deliberately widened. It seemed impossible that a bay like this would have naturally formed at the base of the mountains, but there it was. He could see the current pulling at an array of ships at anchor, the largest of which had 3 masts with furled sails. One of the piers was empty, and though there were people moving crates and barrels around, it seemed that most of the day's business was over. Terry passed by a pair of otter-like children, who were doing something with a net. One of them glanced up at him as he approached, but went back to her work as he passed. The breeze was stiff out on the edge of the pier, and as Terry looked out over the water, a strange and sudden certainty took hold, and he called out,
Cecilia, are you there?
I am, though a bit surprised you noticed me.
The voice sounded in his head, just as Shy's had, but he answered aloud.
Can you come up on the dock?
He asked, glancing around.
Having your voice in my head is disconcerting.
A splash drew his attention to the water, and he saw Cecilia with her arms folded over the edge of the pier. She rested her cheek on a forearm as she looked up at him, water sluicing down her raven black hair.
Evening, lover, she said,
as he folded his legs under him and sat down next to her.
You seem to be adjusting rather well to life on Celestine.
He let his breath out in a rush and shook his head.
Not really. This place keeps fucking with me.
Well, you've already beat the odds. Most templates don't last a week.
So, you weren't kidding about that, huh?
He asked, and she shook her head.
We get one a year, and they last an average of 3 days.
Why is that?
He asked.
Why do you think?
She smirked.
Though after fucking me, you gained a definite advantage. I'm not surprised you're still around.
He smiled down at her, then sat with his feet off the edge of the pier and reached out to rest a hand on her arm. Her smile faded as she looked up at him speculatively, then said,
You're not afraid of me anymore?
Well, I am, but I recognize that you're hiding the bits that made me afraid to begin with. The gesture is touching.
She laid her head on her hands and sighed.
There's only so much I can do, Terence. Still, you are full of surprises. How did you know I was here?
That a guess? I'm bonded to you. Don't ask me to explain magic shit or this funky ESP you and Shy have going on.
About that, there are some things you should know about bonding. Now that you've got a decent chance of making it, I feel I ought to tell you some of those things.
Shoot.
She opened her mouth, hesitated, then said,
Mind if I sit with you? Hanging off a pylon is a bit...
He forced himself to nod.
Sure. If you were going to fuck me up, you'd have done it by now.
Ha! I might still fuck you up. You obviously haven't followed up with that whole asking about my reputation thing.
I've got a pretty good idea of your rep. I just don't think it applies to us anymore.
As he spoke, she muscled up and twisted, setting a shapely black ass on the dock. Her tentacles hung beneath her, not quite motionless, but not exactly a hive of activity either. He got the feeling she was deliberately trying not to draw his attention to them, as she asked,
Don't you?
You kept your word to me at least, so we're good until you break it. There are all kinds of sayings about how treacherous the sea is, even back home. And you kind of remind me of a sea witch character from a movie my sisters made me watch, except you're way hotter than she was.
Oh? Please tell me you're not talking about Ursula from The Little Mermaid.
I'm not talking about Ursula from The Little Mermaid,
he answered without hesitation, then sat very still. Her eyes narrowed.
Yes, you are.
Nope. Cause you're hot and trim, not fat and followed around by two ugly fish. How the hell do you even know about that?
I fucked my fair share of templates, Terence Mack. I have people watching all the places they're prone to appear near the shores I control. Most of them talk incessantly about your world, and the comparison has come up more than once.
He quirked an eyebrow and said,
And you're a contributing factor in that whole average of 3 days thing?
Yes. I usually kill the templates I find once I get their seed, so they don't cause problems. But that in itself is beginning to cause problems.
She glanced at him, then away, and said,
What do you know about the Twilight Zone?
Not much. Killed a locutor the other day and almost bought it cleaning up the monsters she left behind.
The look of complete incredulity he got from that was completely worth it, and he grinned, but the grin faded as he said,
"That's actually one of the things I wanted to talk about. I didn't intend to kill her. I just wanted to attack her. The killing part was, I don't want to call it instinctive, but I don't know what else to call it. I snapped her neck like a twig."
She nodded slowly, then reached up and ran her hand over the top of his head, ruffling the short, bristly hair. He scrunched up his face a bit as she did it, and she said,
"I was curious. You look good with short hair, but you should shave the beard you've got coming in."
Terry reached up and ran his hand across the week's worth of growth he had and nodded, then said,
"Not exactly had time to get a razor, and I've got no money. Should get some when I go back to the tavern we're staying at, but none at the moment. You were going to tell me why I killed that woman when I didn't intend to?"
"Your bonds influence you, Terrence. They won't make you do things, but they'll influence your feelings about what you experience, particularly eldritch bonds like my own and your dryads. And yes, incidentally, I knew she was there. You don't regret the killing, do you?"
"No, but that's a big part of what concerns me. I killed unintentionally, and I'm not bothered. I should be."
"I hate the Twilight Zone, and I suspect the other two women in your life do as well. It'll be very hard to hold back when dealing with zone agents as a consequence, and it'll only get harder the more women you involve yourself with, provided they too hate the zone."
"Why would you hate the zone? I wouldn't think it has much to do with you."
She trailed off and frowned, then snapped, "I don't like feeling I should be honest with you. It goes against my nature."
"Well, I suppose the bond goes both ways in that respect, then. I feel like you should be honest with me. I'm not going to play you, and I'd appreciate your reciprocity."
She sucked her teeth, then said,
"The zone is a consequence of the first template I fucked, and then foolishly let wander around. He bonded me and several other powers, but the reality of this place unhinged him. He wants to destroy it, so he used his power to create the zone."
"Why?"
Cecilia looked at Terry steadily and said,
"If I tell you, I might wind up having to kill you depending on your answer. I want you to know that, because I will tell you. Consider this a coin toss on your fate, Terrence Mack."
He swallowed and nodded. Her eyes narrowed as she stared at him for a long moment, then said,
"The people of this world call the people of your world templates, because that's literally what they are. Celestine was created by someone, don't ask me who, using human beings as templates for all the other intelligent creatures. That's why you can breed with them all. Many of the more powerful races, in fact, can only breed with templates."
She paused, then sighed, and said,
"Celestine steals souls from your world for that purpose, Terrence, and not just any kind of soul."
She met his gaze and held it as she said,
"Heroic souls."
He laughed. She didn't. He stopped.
"You've got to be kidding me, Cecilia. I didn't die a hero. If anything, I died failing to be a hero."
She shrugged and said,
"What makes you think that doesn't count? I'm just telling you what is true. Not all heroes who die wind up on Celestine, but only heroes wind up here. The problem is what happens after they get here."
She gave him the side eye, then looked back out over the water.
"Eldritch races on Celestine need templates to breed, but heroic human men don't generally appreciate being denied their just reward in the afterlives they believe in. Of those who survive, many decide they're justified in working to destroy Celestine if only to keep their fate from those who will follow them. The zone was created by one such, and of them he's the closest to success. He's not the only template working for the zone either, and it expands with every new recruit. That's why I tend to kill the ones I find after I get what I want from them.
Yeah, that's kind of shit.
Which part? Cecilia asked, looking at him keenly.
Here's the part where my life hinges on my answer, and something tells me I can't lie. All of it, the whole thing, it's a big steaming pile. But if you're wondering, I'm not going to go down the rocks fall, everyone dies route. That's compounding silly with stupid. No one here deserves to die because they're caught in a system they had no hand in creating. That's like nuking North Korea because whatever Kim's in charge these days is being a dick. Stupid.
What about the fact that none of these folk are real people? Cecilia asked.
Just because I don't think so doesn't mean...
He trailed off, his mouth hanging open as the ramifications of what he just said hammered themselves home in his heart. Cecilia laughed at him, but it wasn't an I'm going to kill you laugh. It sounded, if anything, rueful. You can't help how you feel, Terence. Like I said, you're not the first template I've dealt with. You're not even the tenth. This place isn't believable, so you don't believe it. I understand. Now maybe you understand why I don't like feeling as though I have to be honest with you. Like you'll know every little lie. Fault me for it. He reached out and wrapped a hand around her shoulder and pulled her close, kissing her forehead absently before resting his cheek against her head.
Yeah, I get it. I'm sorry.
She didn't reply, not immediately. Instead, she wrapped her arm around his waist and seemed to sag into him, and he felt her warmth through the rain cloak he wore. I've been listening to your heart, Terence. Several times in the last few days, the seeming unreality of this place has almost overwhelmed you. It's so hard for templates to adjust to Celestine. Even if I didn't kill every template I find, you still wouldn't live very long on average. Most Eldritch will want to get rid of a template after they mate, some to keep the zone from spreading, most because they're greedy bitches and don't like to share. Those that do survive almost always bond with a powerful Eldritch, and she protects him, hides him away from the world to shelter his mind. I would have done that with you if you'd proven compatible with me.
I'm sure you'd have killed me pretty quick then, he murmured. I can't deal with treachery.
He remembered Lisa's look as she'd nestled against Voight and betrayed him.
It's like a knife in my heart.
Such is the way of things with heroes. He could hear the regret in her voice, but she hid her face under his chin. I want you so badly, Terence Mack. But you're right. I'd wind up killing you too if I took you with me. It's in my nature.
Were you hoping to kill me tonight?
He asked. The thought had occurred.
Will you?
She shifted, then squeezed him harder, and her tentacles writhed in agitation as she said, No. You're the right kind of hero for Celestine, and she is waning. I have noticed that in the last few centuries, the templates who arrive here are becoming less and less able to cope with their new circumstances. I have to take a chance that you're the one to save her.
How do I do it?
Cecilia shifted, looked him in the eye, then kissed him. He felt a familiar lust rise in him, as he kissed her back, but it receded as she broke contact and put a finger against his lips. You're bound to me. You have a shard of my power. It will be true of any female you have sex with. You should seek out powerful women and bond with them, then go to war. The template behind the Twilight Zone is old and mighty, and the power of one of his bonds keeps him alive far beyond his allotted time. If you want to oppose him, you must become mighty in your own right. 5 of the powers are still bound to him. You should gather at least that many yourself.
What about you?
He asked, still struggling under the weight of the lusts she inspired in him. My bond to him is long since broken, replaced countless times. He could not keep me. It will not be so easy with the others. They are still with him, trapped in the center of the zone. Worse, he is aware of you. The appearance of templates is a regular occurrence, after all. The locutor you killed is but the first of many who will search for you. No matter where you go, you will never know peace on Celestine, Terence Mack. Not until you destroy my first love. If you want any chance at peace, you must kill Thomas. He nodded, and they shared a companionable silence for a while, with only the sounds of the wind and water breaking the stillness.
Do you still want my name?
He asked. She blinked, and he said,
Ask again, and I'll give it to you. First, last, and middle. Whether I should or not, I'm going to trust you. Every instinct I have says it's a bad idea. But I want you to know that I'm on your side in this. I don't want you to betray me.
Tears welled in her eyes. She set her forehead on his, as they spilled down her cheeks, and she put her finger on his lips again. Do not tell me. Your willingness is enough. I swear to you, I will never again ask for your true full name. Keep it secret. Keep it safe.
That last reminds me of something. Man, that's gonna bother me all night now, I can tell.
Terry shook his head, then reached for and pulled Cecilia's finger away from his lips. He kept her hand, though, and leaned forward to kiss her again. The overwhelming lust didn't rise a second time, but he'd already suspected it wouldn't. It was one of her tricks. Had to be. She wasn't in the mood to trick him now.
I can't say I love you, because it wouldn't be true, but I wish it were,
he said, breaking the kiss a moment later.
Will it be enough for now if I tell you I want you to be happy, and that I'll do what I can to make that happen?
Cecilia laughed at him, then caught his head in both hands, pulling him in for a quick kiss of her own. Don't die, Terence Mack. If you keep surprising me, I may become genuinely fond of you. For we ancients, surprises are treasured above all else. Remember that. It'll serve you well. Then she slipped off the edge of the pier and disappeared into the dark waters with a splash.
I'll take that as a yes.
He got up, bemused, and ran his hand over the top of his head before pulling his hood back up and into place. He stayed where he was, though, listening to the water lap the pier, listening to the wind and the sleepy sounds of the town behind him.
What about the fact that none of these folk are real people?
The thought froze him. They had to be real people or he wouldn't care for them. Except that wasn't true, was it? He cared for movie heroes all the time and they weren't real. Yet here his thoughts seemed to flip from acceptance to rejection, and he had no conscious control over which he felt.
So what do I do?
It seemed to him that he couldn't fight for a world he didn't believe in. Not really fight. When it came down to life and death, what would keep him from running away? He was good at running away. He'd done more than his share of running as a boy. Whenever he didn't think he could win, he ran away. That's what one was supposed to do.
Only heroes wind up here.
He scrubbed at his face, as though he could wad up and throw away the uncertain thoughts that plagued him. Part of him wanted to embrace the role, say, that's right, hero.
then there was the sensible part of him that had worked day in, day out for years. 2 jobs, sometimes 3, to keep a roof over the largely ungrateful heads of his family. The part of him that had,